I'm Felicia Shakiba, and this is CPO Playbook, where we solve a business challenge in every episode. The reasons behind the failure of 90% of startups are multifaceted, making it challenging to attribute to a single cause. While some attribute this failure to insufficient funding, acquiring funding itself necessitates an entrepreneurial mindset. But what exactly constitutes an entrepreneurial mindset? And how can it be fostered within a founding team to facilitate better decision making? In her article on the three traits of an entrepreneurial mindset, Meredith Summers highlights the importance of being solutions-oriented, adaptable, and anti-fragile. Today, Jason Park, CEO and co-founder of Coldcart, shares his insights on the significance of an entrepreneurial mindset in launching a startup. He stresses how the success of his team members depends on cultivating this mindset and offers strategies for nurturing it within the team. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Felicia. Glad to be here.
We're excited to have you. Jason, could you please start by introducing Coldcart and explaining the core problem your company is focused on solving?
Yeah, so we are a technology platform for e-commerce brands with perishable products. So specifically, if your product is frozen or refrigerated, think like a meal kit or a frozen box of steaks or something like that. It is prohibitively expensive and prohibitively complicated to ship to your customers because the product spoils. So because the product spoils, you have to constantly change how you ship based on the temperature and the weather, on-time delivery, and you have to do that while getting the lowest cost possible. This is just so unwieldy for companies. So we've created a technology platform that automates process across warehouses, shipping carriers. We figure out down to the level of each individual box, how many packs of ice should you put in that box, for example, and all of that runs through a single kind of plug-and-play platform. And so companies on our platform are typically saving about 15 to 50% cost per shipment. And we've been reducing spoilage and refunds from late shipments by about 52%. So just getting started, looking forward to continuing to scale this business. It's been quite a journey. We got a great team that we've been fortunate to bring on to do that with us.
It's a pretty impressive problem you're taking on. It's very detailed, and it sounds like you've put a lot of work behind coming up with a working solution. I'd like to refer to an article I read by Meredith Summers. And in her article on the three traits of an entrepreneurial mindset, it highlights the importance of being solutions-oriented, adaptable, and anti-fragile. Are these competencies important to you? Do they apply to your world?
100%. It definitely resonates, whether it's at Coldcart or other situations I've been in where we were creating a new business or frankly just solving a problem in a way that hadn't been solved before. And I think what also resonated about the article was the argument that, yes, startups definitely need this, but startups alone can't solve all the world's problems. You need large corporations, you need government, you need NGOs who also have an entrepreneurial mindset and can solve problems when you think about it. That's a lot of people who need to have this entrepreneurial mindset. And I think one thing that I've often thought about in this context is I think it's commonly believed that the entrepreneurial mindset is a set of innate personality traits, who you are versus something that can be taught. And yeah, I think one thing I've really been trying to do is try to think of it not necessarily in terms of personality traits and sort of things that are innate and inalienable, but you know, what does it look like when people who have this mindset work? How do they approach a problem? What's distinct about that? And maybe by getting to a more framing of it, that we could kind of help more people have that kind of mindset or kind of solve problems in the way that I think very much agree with the article is needed in our society. But yes, it definitely resonates.
And so as you continue your journey, how does the definition of entrepreneurial mindset take shape for you?
Our customers are trusting us with one of their most, if not the most mission-critical process they had, the sort of fulfillment of an order and the delivery of that order to a customer. that touches every sale they make. And it's a process with a lot of steps and a lot of details below the surface, and frankly, a lot of entrenched views on how those steps should be performed. And so from a kind of, as we were developing our product and our business, you know, our challenge was kind of twofold. One was that because this is such a mission critical process, the bar on quote unquote minimum viable, to use that kind of product management term, there's a very high level of minimum viability of every step of that process, and a very high bar that customers are expecting you to clear for them to essentially trust you with their business and their customers. And so how that shows up at ColdCard, there are sort of three things that I've observed, you know, with a team and myself, and just thinking about these things. And it comes down to, how do these people work? How do they approach problems? And I think there are kind of three factors that I think sort of show up consistently. One is a focus on why over what. You get a lot of information every day. You talk to people. You see and hear a lot of things, but this is really about going beyond what you see and hear and really digging for underlying causes, origins, motivations. That's that level where you actually start to solve problems in ways that are different and better. But you have to be the one to dig for those types of insights. They don't present themselves. Think about, for example, every company we meet, every brand we meet, usually will say something at the beginning like, oh, I want to ship through UPS. Why do you want to ship through UPS? Oh, because I have discounts at UPS. Okay, well, how's your on-time delivery? Oh, I am refunded 10% of my shipments here this past month because a lot of late deliveries. And so it's like, okay, one interpretation of that is I've got to ship them through UPS. But what if I can solve both your problems, cost and on-time delivery? What if I can do that by picking a different carrier for every shipment based on what the cost or the on-time delivery is? And that can actually start to move the curve forward in terms of being able to get to not just better cost, but also better on-time delivery through a different model. But you don't get through to that kind of solution, I think, unless you're asking the right questions. So that's one. I think a second quality that manifests, I think, how people with the entrepreneurial mindset approach the work is this idea of progress before perfection. This is an idea that's become pretty widely accepted over the past couple of decades with, you know, agile product development, lean startup, and things like that. It means, one, that you don't let unknowns stop you from moving forward, but rather you use those unknowns as hypotheses to test and you turn them into knowns. It also means being very aggressive and very precise about deciding what do we actually need to solve versus what can wait to be solved until later. That can be very difficult. I do think this gets kind of misunderstood often as justification for lazy, sloppy work. And, well, I'll just put it out there. The customers will tell us what they want. It's, sure, the customer is the ultimate judge, but a customer is not going to sort of forgive a crappy product because, oh, we run an agile development process. You know, I try to tell that to a customer, right? But rigor doesn't have to be slow. It just means that, just like everything else about a startup, be resourceful and fast about using what you have available with data, whether that's huddling up for 30 minutes to think about potential failure scenarios. You know, just this idea that we are so decisive, or you are so decisive about what's important to know and what's not, and you don't let the unknown stop you. I think in one way that's manifested at ColdCard is we made a decision very early on in our product development to focus first on the physical shipping outcomes before we really got into optimizing and fine-tuning the user experience. Because ultimately, what job is our customer hiring us to do? They need their boxes shipped. And while we may not physically touch the boxes, they're entrusting us to make sure the right things happen with those boxes. What matters is what happens to the shipments and that the work gets done. And a lot of us kind of come from environments where UX is very important and we have a lot of passion about that. And shoot a step sometimes and say, all right, well, we're going to focus on that later. And our standard for UX is it just shouldn't get in the way. And now that we've got the foundation for the platform, that the operations side of it really works and works very seamlessly and scalably, that now we've really shifted to saying, all right, now let's come back to the UX and think about, all right, the day-to-day users of our product and how can we make their lives more efficient? How can we give them better information faster and in better ways? And then self-service and things like that. But there was a decision to say one comes before the other versus trying to solve all of it at the same time, because it's all kind of part of the same product. And then I'd say the third.
Before you get to your third point, I wanted to ask, I've seen a lot of people struggle with this point, progress over perfection, because they really are perfectionists and they're extremely good at what they do. And they can't hold themselves to a product or the work that they do and see something either unfinished, leave their fingertips. I'm just curious, how does someone successfully deal with that type of situation?
It is very hard to do in practice. And frankly, we are taught in school to be the opposite of this, right? Your job is to learn the material, complete your assignments, and answers are right or wrong. And we're taught to be completionists. So we're taught to do the whole thing. And it's very binary. Oh, well, biology is more important than social studies, so I'm going to focus most on biology and not really do any social studies. You can do that, right? But then you get penalized through a lower grade. So we're disincentivized to do this from early on in our lives. So it is challenging. I think one thing that our team has done really well is we've really built a process around ensuring we do this. Our head of product, you know, runs this great process where we get together every month. Let's call it Better Table. And for product ideas and priorities are accumulating kind of throughout the month, and then they all get reviewed in conjunction with each other during this betting table process. And then we allocate points across and say, okay, well, this one's going to get 5 weeks worth of engineering time versus two, et cetera. And then that is the work that's then done the following month, and it all watches before the end of the month. And so what that does is, just like we were talking about earlier with focus on the back end versus the front end, your user experience at first, is it kind of forces us to prioritize, because at the end of the day, everything is important. People don't just create bad product ideas for the sake of creating ideas. Yeah, what creates these ideas because they matter and they are important. It's what's so hard about it, but it ensures that we're constantly forcing ourselves to prioritize, as well as it keeps us focused on output and ensures that we are continuing to ship features, that we're continuing to not just talk about ideas, but actually publish and put things out. And I think process has been one way our team has really come up with a good way of helping us make those decisions collectively and have that mindset. Because it's very hard, because even we're taught from birth, essentially, that this is not how the world works. And all of a sudden you get into business and startups and centers like, oh, no, let's do it completely different. Right? It is.
I really like that idea, the betting table. Okay, so I'm going to let you hit on your third point. Go ahead.
The third way that I think an entrepreneurial mindset has shown up at Cold Card is people, team members, really seeing ambiguity as opportunity. And what that really means is sometimes there's a way that this is the way things are done, and it's the opposite of that. It's, oh, we don't have a way to do that yet, or there isn't a way to do that yet. And the people who I think kind of have these traits look at that as opportunities to take ownership, to create, to build something worthwhile. And in many ways, just like we talked about with sort of this idea of progress over perfection, that this is also not intrinsically wired into us. Humans are biologically wired to fear ambiguity and to crave. There's a lot of good sort of biological reasons why that makes sense. Startups are entirely ambiguity because nothing exists yet. And so logically, startups equal fear. And while the idea of being in a startup and having a big sort of blank canvas to create all these solutions is very exciting, the experience is different. And it is scary. And you don't always know what to do, or there's no clear right or wrong answer. And a great example, or one example, like has really kind of shown itself in action, is something that could have been very simple and kind of a chore, which was that we got to a point in our company where we needed a CRM system to manage all the sales lead, the different sales conversations happening. And part of the answer to that is you go find a tool. So we went and we decided to use HubSpot. But the other part of that's how you use the tool. A lot of companies will just take something like HubSpot and implement it and call it a day. Our team, and it was really cool to kind of watch this. You could almost, like, even though 100% remote, you could like see the energy kind of coming through the virtual room, so to speak, is that our team really saw that as an opportunity to
really build a best-in-class sales machine. They're kind of like, look, we can use this to make ourselves faster. We just hired our first full-time sales hire. There was a lot of kind of just working through, all right, like, how do we really make this into an advantage for us? And I think the team in this case really saw this blank space and saw that as an opportunity to not just sort of hope the gap gets filled with something off the shelf, but really to create and to define what do we want our sales process to be like? How can we move through these deals as fast as possible with as high kind of close rates as possible? And a lot of great, I think, insights and kind of findings and discoveries just even came out of the process of doing that. And so I think that's an example of when ambiguity is opportunity and when people really see that.
I like that you framed it as ambiguity as opportunity. I've heard this competency shared as dealing with ambiguity, but I think you said it better. And when I first came across this competency, when I was getting certified by Korn Ferry International's 360 executive coaching report, when you get that type of certification, you're actually shown all of the statistics around each competency. And this particular competency, I can tell you, is the most challenging for anyone to achieve. It's like one of like the top five, I would say. And it's actually like one of the most desired. And so I think that there's a lot to say when someone works in a startup, because startups are always known to have this ambiguous factor. And if someone can get through that, I think it's really admirable to see that people can actually successfully view ambiguity as an opportunity. So I agree with you. I agree with all of the three points that you made, which leads me to my next question. And I want to understand, because knowing how important an entrepreneurial mindset is, I'd love to learn, what were the biggest hurdles you faced during the initial stages of hiring for your startup? And how did you address those?
Hiring the people to begin with, because you think about, what does a startup look like at the very beginning? I was a guy working out of my basement. There's no business. There's no product yet. I'm saying, hey, like, we've got a lot of great equity we can offer you, and one day this will be worth so much money. But right now it's pieces of paper. And I think that, because again, especially these days, people find the idea of startups very exciting. But I think that in the hiring process, people really do self-select. And there were a lot of offers that I made before finally someone decided to join, who is our CTO, who is still with us, you know, despite having to work with me. It was interesting that you actually were talking about things like ambiguities, fear, and things like that that go along with that. That when I made offers to these people and we're really going through the process of, you know, they were going through the process of, do I want to, you know, leave what I'm doing and do this startup? The amount of existential anxiety that came out in those conversations, I mean, so much more than hiring for a role at a more established company or something like that. That, because really, it's like the type of risk that goes into joining a startup really gets into these sort of fundamental kind of who we are as people and what is an appetite for risk and how do we sort of face challenges, a lot like the entrepreneurial mindset article is describing, anti-fragile, things like that. And again, not to say that people didn't join aren't therefore fragile. No, of course not. But it's just a specific type of kind of risk and sort of challenge that you put yourself through. And it's interesting. I even had one person who, a pretty senior person in their career, who deliberated for weeks on, I really want to do this, but I'm just not sure. And the thing that ended up pushing them to not do it, their sort of big signal from the universe, was that they just started remodeling their house.
Yeah, the cost of the house remodel was the straw that broke the camel's back eventually.
Really?
And so like, well, yeah, they're like,
okay.
I do think this is an area where having multiple co-founders helps, because then you're not the only crazy person that someone sees. They see that there are other people who are also committed to the mission. And in my case, even though I was the only full-time employee at ColdCart in the beginning, I did have three co-founders who had exited startups previously and very successfully. And one of them was the founder of Blue Apron, which was the company that essentially created the perishable e-commerce industry that we sell to now at ColdCart. And so I think this helped give us credibility and legitimacy that help the people who joined us in the early days kind of get over that hump, you know, strengthen numbers. Even last week, I was telling our CTO, Joe, you know, as soon as you joined, you de-risked this thing for everyone else by more than 50%. So now it's not just me who they see who's crazy. There's someone else who's bought into this as well. And so each person who joined Cold Card made me just a little less crazy in the eyes of everyone else who joined afterward. And it reduced kind of the risk for the next person and the next person.
When you reflect on your experiences, are there any insights you wish you had gained earlier or actions you would have taken differently concerning talent and people-related challenges?
I think that's a question that in some ways never reaches a final answer because every specific person is different, every specific situation is different, and a lot of times you don't really know how effective something you did was in this regard until later. But when I've tried to assess myself on the three dimensions we talked about, based on things people have told me I've done better on versus worse on, you know, starting with this dimension of why over what, this idea that you abstract away from specifics and get to another level of why, root causes, etc. As someone whose Myers-Briggs personality type is very high on the intuiting and conceptual dimension, for me, it's almost easier to use an analogy than it is to say something specific. And so I naturally get a lot of energy from this type of thinking and dialogue. I think that at Cold Card as a team, we've been fortunate to build a team of people who are naturally curious, who are high on critical thinking, and generally not content to just accept the first answer they get. If you listen to our meetings, you hear a lot of questions like, well, what are we really trying to solve here? Or, you know, why does that matter? And I think these types of questions that get to or help get to the root cause of different things you're seeing. And where I have to challenge myself in this regard is to not abstract so much that what I say is too open-ended, that it leaves too much room for people to diverge in what they take away and understand, and that makes it harder to get to alignment later. At the end of the day, why still has to turn into what? Because we're building something, and that's why we exist. And so I have to find ways to check myself on whether I'm being specific enough. You know, I always ask the people I work with to call me out if I'm not being specific enough or it's not clear what the action is.
I just have to remind myself to be mindful of that slippery slope. That obviously, I value rigor. I have a lot of questions, and ask those questions in a way that doesn't either slow down the process or seem like it's slowing down the process, right? And you kind of remember that is a slippery slope. I think having an institutional process helps, but then also I think for any one of us, everyone in startup is a leader, so everyone has a role to play, I guess, like how we kind of ask those questions, how we give feedback, and just kind of remembering that these things tend to get overly interpreted as too little.
It's a delicate, artful balance.
It is. It's kind of this one, I'd say even more than the other two, are kind of more concept tug of war that you sort of have to keep pulling on it to make sure you have the right balance across both. And then in terms of ambiguity as opportunities, so I'm kind of a weird person in the sense that I actually get a lot of energy from ambiguity, that for me, ambiguity is actually freedom. And I know we're talking about that kind of in a positive sense of this discussion, but really I'm referring to that more as maybe a personality flaw than I have or something. But I was volunteering in a food bank in Chicago where I lived the other day, and they give you this set of art, follow these 10 steps to pack these boxes that we're going to ship out. And without even knowing, of course, I'm like, I don't want to do that. I want to create my own process. I have made my own process, and I wasn't even really aware of it. And then someone came by and they're like, what? Oh, there's different from everyone else. And I think part of that's also like the learning or the thing that I had to constantly sort of hold myself accountable to is that remembering that I'm kind of weird in that regard, and that most people have different levels of ambiguity tolerance. Most people have different ways they deal with, they respond to ambiguity with a plan or create structure. Some people just want to spend an hour talking through it, and then that's how they kind of get comfortable with it. I think as a team, we've sort of gotten better at knowing what each other needs and incorporate that into how we work almost subconsciously at this point. Remember when I started out as a new consultant at Bain & Company, where I used to work, they kind of get all the new post-MBA consultants into the same hotel in Miami from all the little offices every year. And everyone trains together and they do this exercise where they actually use a Myers-Briggs and you take your Myers-Briggs and see where your typing is. And they do this exercise where a facilitator stands up and says, okay, we're going to walk through now and literally walk through an example project for a client. And they're like, okay. And different things, milestones happen in the project. And oh, client just sent you 1 out of 10 pieces of data. If you're an N, the intuiting kind, take 10 steps forward. If you're an S, someone who's more sensory and concrete by nature, take 2 steps forward. And what it shows you is that different people get to the answer. They ultimately get to the answer, but they get there in sort of their own cadence and through the way they get there. And the whole sort of moral of the exercise is that everyone handles ambiguity differently. It's important that we are aware of that and consider that and build that into how you work together. And I think for me too, it's also someone who's very much like, well, what are the quickest numbers we can get? Oh, that didn't exist. Let's use that. Oh, that's probably 80% correct, right? And that others on our team, they were more like, we really need a plan, a process. And seeing how they kind of manage the ambiguity and making sure I'm also learning as much as I can from them going through that exercise, the insights that come out of that, and then also just ensuring that I'm building enough of that into my own process and the way I work with others on the team.
And I think you're really doing a fantastic job at Cold Cart, having this reflective conversation on how these apply. It's clear that this is why you're so successful and where you're at today. So Jason, thank you so much for your time and for being with me today and sharing with our listeners how to really cultivate an entrepreneurial mindset. So thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Felicia. I really enjoyed this and appreciated the chance to spend this time with you.
That's Jason Park, CEO and co-founder at Cold Cart. If today's episode captured your interest, please consider sharing it with a friend or visit cpoplaybook.com to read the episode or learn more about leadership and talent management. We greatly appreciate your rating, review, and support as a subscriber. I'm Felicia Shakuba. See you next Wednesday, and thanks for listening.